I see that media across the world is finally engaging in a meaningful way with the women's movement. That we would not have had the successes that we have had, you know, in our first few years of our being, but for the support of media across the world.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to The Safari. This is Mordy Singer speaking. And today we are going to talk about racing cars. And I'm thrilled to have the founder and CEO of the W Series. We have Catherine Bond Muir, who is with us today. And she is, on many fronts, changing the way these events are done. She has created a whole new series, which is, you know, akin to Formula One, but all women drivers that she has sourced and found and trained all over the world. And they have the same car, and they are all on a level playing field, which is very important to her because it's very emblematic of the equality that she hopes to see, not only in the sport, but in the world. So a very inspirational discussion, and I can't wait for you to listen in. Stick around. Catherine Bond Muir, welcome to The Safari. How are you?
Oh, very well. Delighted to be in New York.
In New York, in a spring, beautiful day. And is it raining in London? Probably.
Always.
Well, it's so wonderful to have you here. And this is actually going to be the second, let's call it enthusiast activity that we will have interviewed. We talked to Tom Strazieri of HITS the other day, the horse jumping horse show business last week or 2 weeks ago. And, you know, we love talking about enthusiast activities. And in this case, I think the business that you have is not just about race cars and racing, but it's also about empowerment and actually bringing to maybe a group of people, women, who have maybe been overlooked over the decades or centuries of auto racing. And so sort of it has a double impact, which I think is such a wonderful thing to talk about. And so if you wouldn't mind, for our listeners who might not know what W Series is, explain a little bit about your background, but also about how in 2019 you came to decide, I'm going to create this wonderful company.
Well, this story started many, many years ago. I was a lawyer when I graduated from university and having graduated from law school. And I wasn't a very good lawyer, but I love sport. So I quickly decided to specialise in sport. And I was one of the first official sports lawyers in London back in the day. Because I always believed that I wasn't a particularly good lawyer, I needed to do something else. I did a couple of years of sports marketing, left that quickly because it wasn't sufficiently intellectually challenging, and I ended up in investment banking. I was an equities analyst for a couple of years, so I learned how to read a spreadsheet and a balance sheet. And then I ended up in corporate finance, which was actually my spiritual home, and I did sports and leisure deals for many years. Actually, Chelsea has just been sold to an American private equity group, but we acted for Chelsea when it was sold to Roman Abramovich, however many years ago. It feels about sort of 17 years ago or so. And we acted for Andy Lerner when he acquired Aston Villa, a Premier League football club. So, you know, I've been around sport for quite a long time. Moving forward, I got married very late in life and I had my first and only child when I was 45. So I was a tremendously old mother. Nothing was more important to me than having a child. So I gave up work and move on a couple of years. I was bored and sort of, I thought that me and the school gates possibly wouldn't make the best friends. So I was trying to think about what I wanted to do, and I knew I didn't want to be an advisor anymore. I certainly didn't want to go back to law. I didn't want to go into banking. And exactly at that point, I was just having a drink with a couple of friends who work in Formula One, and they said, what about a women's only motor racing series? And literally the concept happened from a chat in a pub.
And then you said, hashtag rethink racing. There we go. And it all came to be.
It took 2.5 years to put it together, but I looked at the idea and immediately I thought it was a very bad idea. I mean, if women and men can race equally together, wouldn't this concept be seen as being sexist? So why do you need to segregate women? But fortunately, I did some more research. And if you looked at the numbers of women who were racing in single-seater series across the world, year on year over the past 8 years, the numbers of women were going down. So This was in a year, you know, in 2015-16, where there was sort of there were grassroots of success of women's sport. You know, women's soccer was really starting to take hold across the world, and back in the UK, women's rugby and women's cricket was developing. But it seemed to me that the gender issues in motorsport were really significant, and that was really the light bulb moment of thinking there is a business opportunity here, because I'm looking at motorsport and women just aren't represented. And that's not only as drivers, but also, you know, in back of houses, you know, engineers and mechanics. And, you know, now, you know, we have a thriving business in London, and nearly 90% of the people who work back in London are women. So I'm very proud to say, sort of representing all aspects of what you would expect, you know, a business like us to have. You know, there's marketing, comms, lawyers, accountants, me. I sort of run around busily trying to do things, but we have lots of far more capable women than me there.
So talk to me a little about, you touched on this notion that, you know, automobiles, driving a single seat car can be done by anyone. I think I read in some of your materials that the idea was that if you are successful, that not only will women be able to compete within W Series as it grows and continues to thrive and get more prize money and more sponsors, but also they can cross the Rubicon and as they do, maybe I think in one or two cases in NASCAR, maybe more than one or two cases, there are quite successful female drivers in the United States. Is that sort of part of the plan, to be able to have them not only be with you, but also be able to do other things within the sport?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are a platform to give women and drivers across the world, you know, we have 15 different nationalities racing with us, to give them a platform that they will get more experience, more exposure, so they can go on and they can continue in the pyramid of single-seater racing if they want. But there is, you know, numerous series across the world that they can go and race in. And indeed, they are doing that. But, you know, we are a movement to promote women. You know, we would like to see, you know, for example, power steering in Formula 2 and Formula 3 cars. So there is a process, or there are various series that all drivers have to race in and get something called super license points before you can race in Formula 1. And what we want to do is to have, you know, the whole pyramid being perfectly and easily accessible to both men and women. Mm.
There's a wonderful ad from the Olympics. I don't know if they do it every 4 years, but P&G does a series called The Proud Sponsor of Mothers or Mums, I think it is. And the idea being that it's oftentimes the mother, more increasingly, yes, parents, but, you know, they really put a spotlight on the mother who supports the young athletes. P&G and other huge CPG companies are probably salivating at the idea of being able to play with you, work with you, sponsor you, back you. The luxury brands who are increasingly also trying to make sure that, you know, inclusivity and, you know, DEI within the workplace, and forget luxury brands, every brand. In some ways, aren't you sort of this panacea for all of these marketers to rally around?
I should certainly hope so, because we have 20 extraordinary female drivers. They're powerful, they're beautiful, they are brave as you can possibly be. And what they are is that they're standing and leading a movement, promoting women in motorsport across the world. You know, we aren't just a European series. You know, we have a couple of races here in the States this year, and we have our first Asian race. So we are truly a growing global series. You know, this is only our third season, and we are racing alongside Formula One. You know, we have, you know, we race on the world's largest motorsport platform. And I, obviously, I would say this, wouldn't I? But I do think we represent female empowerment across the world.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry. And it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the safari. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the business, because, you know, obviously this is not for the faint of heart. I mean, this is you're starting a whole new sport in a way, right? To target it at a group of people that historically may have wanted to but couldn't. And then you're finding them and you're equalizing the playing field because you're effectively funding them. Talk about sort of, you know, maybe for those who don't even know much about motorsports, how is it set up? How many races? Where do they happen? Prize money, sponsors? What's the sort of the cradle, as it were, of the business? And then maybe touch on at the end the fact that all the cars, I think, are the same car. So there's I find that fascinating because it's unequal in men's racing, or the other race, Formula One, let's call it, because the guy with the best car could possibly win. But I love the fact that it seems as though everyone's driving the same wheels.
Well, that was very purposeful. When you have a piece of paper which is very blank and you're trying to figure out how can you engage a new audience, we believed that it was incredibly important to have equality within the series. And the only way of doing that is by giving the drivers as identical cars as you possibly can. So that's what we decided to do. But more importantly for me, it was also important for us to be open to any female driver, not just the richest drivers. And I think that has been an inherent problem in motorsport. And I sit on the governing body of the British Motorsport Federation. And we constantly struggle with this idea of how do we create greater access to the sport. So we pay all of the drivers' expenses. So they don't have to have a rich mum and dad. You know, they can come as long as we believe that they are the fastest or potentially the fastest female drivers in the world. And so those two points were just of crucial importance to W Series, because we are about promoting the best. You know, we want to find future superstars that we believe, once we have found these extraordinary talents and they do go on and potentially, you know, some of them will get into Formula One, that potentially they will be some of the most famous sports people in the world.
And so 2019, it's only been a few years. I think if I read correctly that you are already the number two motorsport in the United Kingdom after Formula One, and you're the most watched female sport after soccer, football. For the other side of the pond. I mean, how does that happen so quickly? Is there some latent need for this that suddenly exploded? I mean, how can you rationalize that in just 3 years in a pandemic?
Well, those stats came out of our first year, in fact. We got a really good terrestrial deal in the UK. And I think W Series captured people's imagination. I mean, we did have a number of British drivers and people are obviously attracted to that. But it was a new concept and people had never actually thought about women racing with each other in motorsport. And, you know, who knew? You know, the racing is really exciting. You know, one of the things that you do when you, you know, plan any new business or, you know, put a sport together is you can control everything, but actually what you can't control is what happens for me on the circuit, or you know, what happens on the pitch and how well the women would drive. And so in our first race in Hockenheim, which was an incredibly rainy, you know, grey, miserable day, it was just the biggest relief to me after, you know, just a few minutes thinking, oh, thank God, you know, they are great racers, because we didn't know, how they would race, you know, together. But they are as equally as competitive as the men. We have, you know, lots of overtaking and we have exciting racing. And that was the biggest relief to me, because when you're putting a sport together, because I'm a sports fan, as I explained earlier, I was desperate to provide great entertainment. You know, I don't want to, you know, for W Series just to be a worthy cause. We need to entertain, and thank heavens that's what we do.
And so today, 15 races this year or more?
No, we have 10 races this year at eight events in seven different countries. And as I say, we have two races in the US. Our opening race was in Miami, and then we're racing in October at in COTA in Austin.
So how, talked again about a little bit of the plumbing of the business. Like, how do you get this traveling circus around the world, and how, and a bit about the business model, you know, because those who aren't that familiar with sort of this scale of event, maybe talk a little about how you pull it off.
So we have two sets of cars that we ship around the world, and you know, they're crisscrossing, you know, the Atlantic at various times, you know, going from one place to another. You know, if we were going to put our race cars onto a 747, I think we would take up the whole plane. So, you know, we're not rich enough, and we want to keep our carbon footprint now down. So it's much better for us to have two sets of cars that as I say, are shipped around the world. And, you know, when we're planning where we race throughout the year, we have to be very mindful of the logistics. So the logistics do limit us somewhat, but we have grand plans for next year. I'm not going to say where we're going, but we do want to expand into various new countries. But the limiting factor is going to be logistics. And for our business plan, our revenue comes in from sponsorship. So sponsorship of the series, you know, we have instituted teams, but that is much more of a sponsorship of a team.
Okay, that was my next question.
So it is not, they're not technological teams.
Yeah. So it's not like McLaren or Ferrari or...
Yeah, absolutely. So even if we did get manufacturers joining W Series in the future, I think that they will have very limited ability to change the cars, because what I'm determined that, you know, we keep that solid DNA of W Series about having, you know, more or less identical cars. And, you know, we have Caitlyn Jenner as a team owner this year. So she's bought some razzmatazz and celebrity to W Series that we haven't had before. And we also will be getting money from, obviously, from media deals, from TV deals. We're trying to put a documentary together at the moment. So, you know, watch this space and see.
That was, again, on my list. So, you know, I remember, I don't know, was it 3 or 4 years ago when they did the first series of the Netflix?
Drive to Survive.
And the big teams didn't want to have anything to do with it. And it was basically, you were just following all these sort of maybe the second tier guys, who all became wildly popular and famous. So, you know, this sort of nexus, I mean, obviously sports is media, but the nexus of television or streaming with the ability to amplify the human side, the behind the scenes. So talk a little bit, obviously don't go into what you can't disclose, but how you saw that impacting Formula One and the progression that maybe have had spillover effect to you, because many more people are interested. The amount of women I know, friends of mine, who are fascinated by that show because of the human intrigue, and it's an amazing television series.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of research out there, and you'll know this more better than me, that women associate with stories much more. So it's incumbent on us as a new business to be able to tell our story about the drivers, you know, across the world. And so the perfect way of being able to do that is by having a well shot, a beautifully shot documentary demonstrating that, you know, our drivers, you know, are real, you know, heroines. Then, you know, we have, you know, our eldest driver is from Finland, you know, Emma Kimmelainen. You know, she's got a, you know, she is a mother. You know, she's got a daughter. She, you know, she leaves her daughter back in Finland to come and race all over the world. And then our youngest driver is Juju Noda from Japan, and she's 16 years old. So we have a whole array of different drivers, you know, and Juju has been racing, I think, since she's been 5 years old. You know, see, her father was a former Formula One driver. So they come from, you know, they're all different shapes and sizes and backgrounds with, you know, very, very different backstories.
So you have built a business. Let's sort of pivot a little bit to the entrepreneur story. You are a business builder, which you founded a company at the beginning of a pandemic. Obviously, it's an outdoor activity-ish, but it is. But, you know, you guys are all a business, so you're in offices or not, as the case may be. Let's not focus too much on the pandemic side of it, but how has it been building a business, things that you find difficult or interesting, you know, for other entrepreneurs who are listening? What are some of the points of resilience that you would impart upon them and especially over the last 3 years?
This wouldn't have happened if I had my own way. I wanted to give up during the fundraising process, you know, the 2.5 years that between idea and getting us driving. But for my husband, who actually wouldn't allow me, because he said, you know, you've got so much traction, you carry on. I was worried that, you know, I went at the point that I'd spent 2 years on this, that if I'd spent another year on it and failed, I would have wasted 3 years of my life. So there is this, you do have to have tenacity, I think. But my real experience of once this has started going is that the one skill that I have learned is to just roll with the punches, you know, and they keep coming and you can't predict them. And I think I have grown up a lot. I've become a lot less emotional when things go horribly wrong. And you just have to accept that things will go horribly wrong. I mean, everyone has their story of what happens, you know, in COVID. You know, I remember, you know, me standing in the corner of my bedroom, and actually I just burst out crying because I thought I have spent so much time, you know, in my life, you know, trying to develop this. We had this amazing first year that, you know, we had real fans and we created love. And then, you know, that was facing the fact that it was all going to, you know, go to pot. But, you know, we rolled with the punches. You know, I pulled myself together, thought, you know, don't get too emotional about this and you just carry on.
Yeah, I mean, you've become, as an entrepreneur, or I think every entrepreneur sort of becomes a stoic naturally over time. You know, the obstacle is the way, in the sort of the way of Marcus Aurelius. And I think it's a very wonderful thing to be able to actually learn, because it's typically in entrepreneurialism that happens. We all get hard knocks in other places in our lives as well. But if there's one thread, it's like, you know, just don't worry, keep moving. And as Churchill said, you know, if you're going through hell, keep going, you'll reach the other side. So it's a good lesson. I think it's a very good one. So as we sort of wrap up together here, I'd love to hear two final things from you. One is, you know, we're going to the stars and beyond. So where is the trajectory, your vision for W Series? And then finally, well, I'll get to that later. So tell me where we're going and how fast.
I don't want to grow too quickly. I need to be cautious. But I think that W Series will own the brand of female single-seater motorsport, you know, from karting, you know, going up into, you know, Formula 4, which is the series between the current W Series and karting. You know, we want to be the business that promotes young girls through all the layers of motorsport, you know, and to develop the best female drivers in the world. And also, you know, we do want to represent a fantastic environment to promote STEM for women. You know, STEM subjects and motorsport are perfectly aligned. You know, we have mechanics and we have engineers, and it's wonderful speaking about what we do to school kids, because you see their eyes come alive, because, you know, you're not talking about the mechanics of how to build a bridge. You're talking about sport, and they absolutely love it.
Yeah. No, I relate to that, because we own a wonderful company in Queens called Manor, which is the contract manufacturer of prestige beauty products. And if you go into the lab, where there are 60 people working, many of them scientists, others PhDs, you walk into this lab, and the majority of them are women. And they are young women, and they're in their maybe late 20s, and they're the end customer. And they're taking all the sort of chemistry and science that they've learned in many sort of high diplomas and applying it to products that, frankly, they like to wear themselves or make for their friends. And then they're the ones sort of trotting them out to the brands, to the actual companies that buy these products from us. So it's quite cool to see STEM show up and be able to really empower the next generation, which is wonderful. So in closing, therefore, I'd always like to sort of my guest to end on a positive note of optimism about something. It could be the company, it could be about the world, things that you're seeing that are changing for the better. So the last word is yours, Catherine.
I see that media across the world is finally engaging in a meaningful way with the women's movement. We would not have had the successes that we have had, you know, in our first few years of our being, but for the support of media across the world. And I will be eternally grateful for the individuals at all the media houses across the world, both in press and TV, that have supported us. And I think that they have done a fantastic job.
Catherine Bond-Muir of W Series, thank you so much for joining me on the Safari.
It's my pleasure.